Welcome to the Independent Schools Show podcast series. Please enjoy and head to schoolsshow.co.uk for more information.
Welcome to the Good Schools Guide Forum. My name is Mary Pegler, and today we're going to be talking about special needs. The title is actually How and When to Decide the Route That Would Suit Your Child Best. I'm lucky enough to have with me Koen Kleis, who is the principal of a specialist school, a day school in London, called Burlington House. And it runs from ages 7 to 21. It specialises in children with specific learning difficulties. I'm sure he'll tell you in a minute what that means. And then two ladies from the same school in North Wales, St David's College. Now this is in fact slightly different. It's a mainstream school that has very good specialist provision. It has a centre in it called the Cadogan Centre, where again they specialise in dyslexia. They're registered with CRESTED, the dyslexia organisation. And they will tell you about their school and how it slightly differs from Burlington House. So, Koen, would you like to start and tell us a bit about your school?
Yes, of course. So, as was said, I'm the principal of Burlington House School, which is currently on three sites all around Fulham, Putney, Hammersmith. We've got a prep school, which goes from year 3 to year 8, senior school, years 9 to year 11, and a sixth form, which goes to 21, down in Hammersmith. And we're about to open in September a fourth site, more towards Tooting, Streatham area. And that will be a senior school. And how we operate, as was said, so we are a specialist school, but we're mainstream in structure. So if you look at our timetable, the young people will have 6-7 lessons a day. The aim is when they get to year 11, they do 7-8 GCSEs. So compare that to a mainstream school where they might do 8, 9, or maybe even 10. We stick to 7 or 8 because what we do is we allow time for the support that these young people need to sit these 7 or 8 GCSEs. I feel strongly doing 8 or doing 10, I think, makes no difference later on in life. The important thing is that you get a couple of good GCSEs, which will then keep all your doors open to continue studying, go to university, go into the world of work. And the big difference, I would say, for us is that our staff are trained in teaching young people with SPLDs. So pupils with dyslexia might just need a different approach in how their subject is being taught to them. And then we have the staff who have these qualifications to teach it differently. We are part of Cavendish Education, which is a group of 12, 13 schools in London, outer London, going all the way towards the Welsh border, opening a new school in Purley for children with autism, high-functioning autism, from September. So yeah, it's a moving feast. Very excited to be part of an organization focusing on young people who just find mainstream education a bit of a struggle.
Lovely. And tell us, can you define what a specific learning difficulty is?
Yeah. Yes. So it's a specific need that young people have, which stops them from learning like anybody else does. You could also say it's all the disses in the world. Dyslexia, dyspraxia, dyscalculia, dysgraphia, you know, are the main disses that we refer to when we talk about SPLD, specific learning difficulties. So it's very specific. They might struggle with word processing. They might struggle with maths. And that's the kind of the difficulties our young people have in our schools.
Great, thank you. Now, Felicity, tell us a little bit about St David's.
So We at St David's were on a single site in North Wales. Our school sits between the Snowdonia National Park and the Irish Sea, so a really beautiful rural setting. We are a mainstream co-educational boarding and day school, and we have a specialism in teaching pupils with dyslexia, and we also take pupils with other specific learning difficulties. We have on site our mainstream staff all have qualification in teaching dyslexic learners, and we also have on site our Cadogan Centre, which is that provides our specialist support provision, which Danielle, I guess you can talk about that a little bit more extensively.
Good afternoon. The Cadogan department, we have in the school, we have 68 members of teaching staff, and 28 of those are in the Cadogan department. And the Cadogan department is the centre for specific learning difficulties. As Mary said, we have accredited status for teaching dyslexic learners. So all of the teachers within Cadogan have a level 7, so a master's level qualification in the teaching of dyslexic learners. And alongside that, because it's a requirement of Crested, the English department also have level 7, so a master's level qualification. And they aren't separate departments. We work together as a team. So although the Cadogan department teach over 500 one-to-one lessons every week to individual learners on a one-to-one basis, focusing on their specific challenges, their difficulties, and working with their strengths as well to support the difficulties, we also work in close collaboration with the mainstream teachers. We have in place something called a pupil passport, for example, where we work with the parents, carers, guardians, and the pupils to get the pupil voice of how the pupils feel their education needs to be, what their strengths are, where their struggles are, how that impacts them inside and out of the classroom. And the pupil passport is accessible to every member of staff within the school. So every member of staff should be able to see the pupil voice, should know what the learning difficulties are and how that has an impact within the classroom and outside of the classroom. And then, of course, we also have, in Wales, they're called IDPs, ILPs, the individual learning plans or development plans, which can map to the EHCPs and statements, their SMART targets, to support the learners both in their one-to-one and in the mainstream setting. So that's how the two areas within the school work to support the pupils, both day and boarding, within the learning environment.
Great, thanks. Kuhn, I'm guessing your school doesn't have individual one-to-one sessions, but somehow you manage to integrate it in the learning. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. So we don't have pupils coming out of lessons to go somewhere to do a one-to-one, because what we find is that the groups we put the pupils in are small enough that the support can happen in the class. So let's say on average, a class group will be 8 to 10 students in my schools, and every group of 8 to 10 students will have 2 adults in the room, both qualified to look after these young people. One will be the teacher, and one will be the learning support assistant. So if you're looking at getting the support to do, let's say, English, the staff is available. The other thing we do is that all pupils have a laptop. There's no question about, you will stand out if you have a laptop. No, part of the deal is that part of the fee is that you get given a laptop from day one. So you're all working in the same way. Teachers will, rather than say copy from the board, which we all know dyslexic students don't like doing, we won't do any copying from the board. The teacher will say, I've just shared with you the documents we'll be working from today. They'll open their laptop, document is there, and they're working on it as a class together. But rather than note-taking, which, as I said, dyslexics don't appreciate, it's working from their computer. So yes, so the only thing that students will get support in, which can't be done in class for us, is speech and language therapy and occupational therapy. But then again, rather than do one-to-ones, we try and do the majority of it is group sessions. Because lots of our young people don't struggle talking to us as adults, they struggle talking to each other as peers. So a one-to-one with an adult would not assist here.
Great. And are your groups, your small groups, all the same age? They are?
Yes. So for us, we tend to put them, you might find speech and language groups of year 7 and 8, but we tend to keep them we're in the same key stage with a speech and language therapist or an occupational therapist.
Right, yeah. Great. Now, Felicity, one of the difficulties in inclusive education is how to get that type of support that Coombs School offers integrated into general teaching. And you're an English teacher, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right.
How do you support the slower learners?
Well, I suppose similar to your students, we make extensive use of technology. So all of our students would have a laptop and we use Office 365. This allows the students to become more independent in their learning because they can access the dictation, the immersive reader, which means that rather than relying on an adult or a teaching assistant in the class to read the text to them, they can have the technology to be able to do that. Our focus is really trying to prepare pupils to be successful once they move beyond St. David's. We want to make them independent learners so that they can go on and be successful in the wider world. And really harnessing the power of that technology allows us to do that.
Right.
We were leading the way with that before COVID, and this meant that we were able to overnight deliver a full online curriculum so that our students didn't miss out on any education as a result of the pandemic. And you know, that was amazing for us to be able to keep the contact with them, not just academically, but to support their social and emotional needs as well.
Yes.
Because a lot of what we do at St. David's is not just academically focused. We really are about developing the whole person, and we like to give our pupils a wide range of opportunities. So yes, we're looking to get them qualifications at GCSE and A level, but we're also looking to find their talents, allow them to explore different skills, have access to different qualifications. So we have with BTECs, we have CAD qualifications, we have our Outdoor Education Academy, which allows our students to gain industry qualifications alongside the traditional GCSE and A-level studies.
Right, great. Thank you. And Danielle, we've talked a bit about laptops, but I bet you know about other adjustments that dyslexic children benefit from.
Okay, so as part of the pupils arriving at St. David's, we don't just accept the paperwork that we're given, the reports that come along with them. We talk to the parents and the child, as I've already explained, but we also assess every new pupil to the school.
Right.
We do this not just because of access arrangements in the future for exams, but we do this to get to know and understand them so that we can help them become independent learners and give them that freedom to flourish.
Can you just tell us what access arrangements mean?
I'm sorry, yes. Okay, so pupils that may struggle with reading or with writing, with spelling, and have other additional needs, access arrangements are things that are put in place for exams to give a level playing field. So if it's a physical disability and the pupil is unable to write, they may need a scribe. If it's their normal way of working and they type, then they may be allowed to type. They may be allowed to handwrite, depending on what works for the individual child. And access arrangements aren't giving an unfair advantage. They are to create a level playing field. So if a pupil struggles reading, then they can have a reader in exam. Now, this isn't just a given. You do have to assess the pupils and have scores and evidence from the teachers to support all of this. You can't just come in and say, I'd like a reader and a scribe. And as Flick said a minute ago, and we were talking about the use of generally in schools, we're trying to create independent learners. We're trying to give pupils access to their own learning and their own futures. So we're trying to move away from the use of human beings as readers and scribes and using that technology so that they are independent in their own studies and in their own lives moving forwards.
Great.
Does that make sense?
It does. And extra time as well comes into it.
Absolutely. Because a lot of the pupils, specifically with dyslexia, they may have slow processing or working memory difficulties. They may have slow handwriting or typing speeds or slow reading speeds. And a lot of these co-occur as well. It's not just one thing or another. So you could have pupils with 25% extra time with a reader, with a scribe, with all of the various things in place, with rest breaks to allow for refocus for pupils with ADHD. There's a whole remit of these access arrangements that we work with the pupil to find what works best again so that they have the best outcome that they can get, basically.
Great. Thanks. So as part of the Good Schools Guide, we not only review schools, we have a sort of branch of the service that is consultancy, and I give advice to parents. Sometimes it's general advice about whether they should go for extra support in terms of things like an EHCP, education healthcare plan. And sometimes it's very specific advice about which school is best for their child. And obviously this is quite a complicated area, but Koen, can you just tell us, I mean, we all know that special needs overlap a lot, and it's very difficult to be discreetly dyslexic. You often have difficulties in other areas. People applying to your school, how do they apply?
Okay, so people applying to our school, we will base us on accepting a place on can we meet the child's need. That's all we base it on, nothing else. So we will want, if people want to apply to come to Burlington, we will say, please send us relevant paperwork that will show us what your child's needs are and how they're getting on in the educational setting. So things that we get very often sent is educational psychologist report.
Can you just tell us quickly what that is?
Yes, so it's a report that will assess, in a way, the how a child is learning, and it will also unpick where the child needs additional support, where a child is struggling, and it will put into the report, it will say clearly, the child would benefit from a setting which has got X, Y, and Z. Might say smaller classes, access to IT support. But so we will base our decision on looking after a child on saying, can we meet the needs? And if we can't meet the needs, we will say that at a very early stage. So for us, it works like this. If you want to apply to Burlington, send in some paperwork. We look at all the paperwork. If we say, we might be able to meet needs, we will invite you in. You have a conversation with me. You get given a tour of the school. And that's the point where we think it's important that you feel this could be the right school for our child. Because if it's not a two-way system, it's never going to work. If you feel this could work for my son or daughter, then we will say, why don't you come and trial with us for a couple of days? We do 2 days where we will gently assess the child. We will see the child in action, with their peers, around the classroom, in break times, at lunch times. And at the end of that, everyone who's had contact with the child will give us feedback. The assessments we do will give us some scores. And on the basis of all of that, we will then turn around and say, we think we can offer your child a place. Here is an offer. Or we might say, well, actually, we've realized that your child needs that type of support and we don't offer it. And then the letter might say, we don't think we're the right school for your child. We take our time because, in my view, a child that joins a school like ours, probably the same as St. David's, has been through a horrid time in a previous school setting. And I think it's so important that we get it right. That when they move, it's the right move. And I know parents get very upset if I say, no, we're not the right school. But we're doing it because it's not right for the child. But equally, if we are the right school, God, the change in a child, the change in home life is dramatic. So it's all around child and their needs.
Great. And do you have a particular entrance time, like the competitive prep schools?
No.
Do they come in at 7?
On entrance, my message is always the same. If you know your child is not in the right setting, get them out. Change before it's too late. Change before it affects their confidence, before it affects their well-being. If your child is in year 4/year 5 and they're starting to realize they're not as good as their friends and it starts to affect their love of going to school, I would say that's the time to take them out. So to answer your question, no, you can join a school like ours anytime. I much rather look after a child who's 7 or 8 than a child who's 14, because a 14-year-old will have suffered so much more than a 7-8-year-old. So the sooner you make the, you know, looking at other schools, the better, I would say.
And even mid-year, would you suggest that?
I mean, I've spoken to plenty of parents today who don't think their child wants to sit 11 plus or SATs because they don't think it's right. Why wait till the end of year six to move? Move them earlier. If they're not going to sit the SATs or they're not going to do well at the SATs, it's going to destroy their confidence. Take them out.
So that's something that is particular to special schools and specialist schools. They don't have these set dates when you have to apply, and a lot of them will accept you mid-year. The process tends to take a little bit longer than a mainstream school, so you know they are accepting people all the way through the school year. Felicity, is it the same process for getting into St. David's?
Yeah, it's a really similar process. We do have a number of our pupils who come to us funded by the local authority, and that's done where it's determined that there isn't an appropriate educational setting in that local authority that can meet those child's needs.
And what do they need to get local authority funding?
So it's on an individual basis, and it will depend entirely on the specific local authority that they're dealing with.
Do they have to be in receipt of an education healthcare plan?
Yes, and it has to be determined between the parent and the education authority. But at St. David's, we're quite used to that process, so we can offer advice, and we have access to industry professionals that can help out with that process as well, if needs be.
Right. So does the local authority sometimes put up a struggle about paying the fees?
They do, yes, of course. And sometimes that will be taken to tribunal, and parents will have to fight to have the access to that education for their child. But ultimately, you're trying to get the best for your child and ensure that their needs are met. And again, we can advise, we can point you in the right direction of people that can help with that process.
Right. To make and sure that will the EHCP cover all the fees or just part?
It depends. It's, again, an individual basis.
Great. I might just ask Koen, the EHCP, will that cover all your fees?
Okay. In most cases, children in our schools with EHCP funding, the local authority will have funded all of the fees, but I just want to go back to the struggle. I would call it's a war you're fighting with the local authority. It's more than a struggle, I would say. It's tough, but you do it because it's best for your child. A local authority will not be very forthcoming paying for the fees, because our fees are quite high. So you have to be willing to take them on in a fight almost, because they're going to put up other schools that they recommend that are cheaper for them, that you can just see are not right for your child. So don't expect this to be an easy one. But yes, so to go back to your question, in most of my cases, the funding is covered completely by the local authority.
And travel to school?
Well, travel is a tricky one, because travel is not from the same budget. So you've got to then contact the transport section of a local authority. And some LAs will say, no, we plainly refuse travel because we're paying the fees. Others will say, no problem, we'll pay travel as well. Hard to tell.
Right, thanks. So, Danielle, can you tell us a little bit about boarding? How do the children with special needs fit in there?
So, just as with the day pupils, we have self-funding boarders as well as those with EHCPs and statements.
And does the EHCP cover the boarding fees?
As with all EHCPs and statements, it's whatever is listed within it. So if a local authority from somewhere down south is paying to send the child to St. David's because that school has been named as the provision, then they will pay the boarding fees. If the pupil is a local resident in Conwy County, which is where we are based, they aren't going to pay the boarding fees because the pupil can commute from home because it's on the doorstep. So as has already been said, it is tailored specifically to the needs of the individual child, and it is clearly listed within the EHCP and statements what is covered and what is excluded.
Great, thank you. I did even come across one child who started as a day child at a specialist school, but the taxi fares to and fro were so great that the local authority then took on the boarding fees. I mean, I don't think that happens very often and don't think it's easy, as Koen says, but there are all sorts of combinations out there. So we've covered the EP report and we've covered EHCPs. I was just going to ask you, Koen, you're teaching in London, which is fiercely competitive. Do you find that you have to overcome parents' fear of going to a special school?
Yes. That's why I say stage two of the process is for us to say to parents, look, this is the environment your child will be in. I mean, the biggest thing to overcome is the size of our schools. They're small. Now, parents will love this, but pupils don't always love that. If you come from a school with 1,000 pupils and you go to a school with 100, we all know as adults that's amazing. A child might find, you know, will I have enough friends? Will there be enough people in the year group? So that's a bit of the challenge sometimes. But there's very often misconception about how we go about doing things. That's why I always say, come and have a look. Come at a normal school day, walk around the school. You know, people think we don't do GCSEs. We do. 7, 8 GCSEs in our schools. So it's not too dissimilar, but I think the size really helps them with the support they need to get. So that's, I would say, the biggest obstacle is that size bit and the kind of the stigma still attached to it, which it shouldn't be, I think.
Yeah, lovely. Just a last word. So, Felicity, where do your pupils end up? Give us some lovely success stories.
Our students end up all over the world, taking a whole range of qualifications and going into a wide range of employments.
Is that through universities? Or?
Yeah, so about 75% of our pupils go on to university. And again, that's the whole range of universities. So we've had students going to study pharmacology. We have a lot of our students go on to study design. We have good industry links there and through our CAD qualification, because that's HND level already, that's leading them into towards that particular qualification. We had students last year going to the University of Exeter studying English. We've got students applying for Cambridge. We've got students studying politics. Really, it is the whole range. There's no barrier for our students in terms of where they want to go. And similarly, if they don't feel university is right for them, we have students that will take a gap year. We have students that go straight into industry, into employment. So, yeah, it's really a wide range.
Now, Koen, I would ask you that question, but your sixth form is very new, isn't it?
Yes, our sixth form's only been around for 2.5 years. So our first, I haven't got the stories to tell yet because
records.
They haven't gone that far yet. So, no, come back in a few years' time.
Great, yes. Well, I hope to go later this term to see it. So there will be a review in the Good Schools Guide shortly. So I'll just wrap that up from the panel. Has anybody got any questions they want to ask?
Thank you for the talk. Thank you, Koen, for the talk. I just wanted to emphasize on what the headmaster of Burlington has been saying, because he's saying it, but I lived it actually with him. I had a son aged 14. That he helped us actually get from one meeting that lasted 40 minutes, he helped us get our son out from a mainstream school straight to EOTS by speaking straight how he spoke here and speaking straight to my son and saying to him, I'm not a headmaster who wakes up to failed children. You are having success in an EOTS, local EOTS school. Do not allow anybody to damage that for you. And that complete sentence was taken to court because we were due to court. And the judge said, if he said that, any other headmaster in a special school would say the same thing. They all think the same. He took the time to look at the documents, and he took the time. We weren't going to win the case. It was 50-50. But as soon as I asked the judge whether I should write that down, she said, I don't need you to email him and CC the courts or anything. I know exactly where he's coming from. So I want to thank him again and again for that, because the young person was 14 and exactly damaged, and the young person has so far succeeded. And because he's a racing driver, he stopped racing before. And this, I'm going to break the news to you, he's been selected in a racing academy in Oxford. for someone who has refused school for so long. So thank you for that question. I just want to ask a quick question, yes. No. I just want to ask a question now for my 9-year-old. I know you're saying that, and I agree, they need to be removed very quickly when you know they're not reading, they're not writing. But we got a very special headmistress who loves the child and who says that the child has been knowing those young people from the age of 8 months. And the young person is in year 5. She doesn't think we should remove her. It's nothing. Yes, there is no progress, she agrees. She wants us to allow her to see the child finish in her school. And she will help us move her. She feels if we move her emotionally, she might have other issues. Do you agree with that? What do we do to help this headmistress to keep my child and help her make a little bit of progress? Thank you.
Thank you. The big thing I would say is that when I said move a child ASAP, if it starts to affect the child's well-being, confidence, happiness. I will equally say if a child's happy in school still, then you don't have to move that urgently. Now, of course, if no progress is being made, then you're kind of wasting your time. Now, if heads hold on to children, there might be another agenda there than the well-being of the child. And I think you've got to see through that. I genuinely think if they start to become school refusers or they start being really down about themselves, then it's definitely time to move them. I think, yeah, convince the head to let them go. If you think the agenda is different than your agenda, because some heads will hold on to children because it's a bum on seat and it's fees, so they will hold on to them. Yeah. But thanks for your kind words and good luck to your son. Thanks.
Any other questions?
Thanks. Thanks. A good panel. You know, a great number of questions. I realize that autism and ADHD hasn't been covered. Is it because that's not something that you offer in terms of support in your schools? Just all of you.
Yeah, I think it's right to say that it's not our specialism for Burlington or for St. David's. I mean, I'm lucky to be part of a group called Cavendish Education, and it has got schools in London, new one in Purley, which will very much cater for young people with autism who can access the curriculum and do really well. But it's a different need. So if you go to, I'm not sure about St. David's, if you go to our stand, you will find schools that in London that it's their main focus is helping young people with autism. But definitely Burlington doesn't currently support that.
At St. David's College, our primary focus is supporting specific learning difficulty of dyslexia. But as we all know, there are co-occurring difficulties. So we do have some pupils with ADHD, we do have some pupils with autism, but they are not our primary focus. They are not our specialism, although we are trained in supporting learners with these other difficulties because they are co-occurring. So dyslexia is our primary focus. And then, as the headmaster has said to you, and you've heard Flick say as well, we work with all of these other reports, with all these other professionals to see if we can meet the needs of the child and accept them on an individual basis if we feel it is best for the child.
Back to you.
Hi, thank you very much for the words so far. I've got a daughter in year 5 and she's mildly dyslexic. How do we make the choice of whether to send her through standard mainstream 11 plus exams versus going to a specialist school?
Happy to.
Okay, I'm going to repeat what I said earlier. If she's in year 5, if she's making progress and she's happy, keep her there and reevaluate at the end of year 6. If she's not happy or not making progress or starting to become really aware that she is behind in comparison with her peers, then move her. And in a way, what parents very often do before they bring the child to our school, they come and have a look themselves without telling the child. And if they think that the environment could be right, then they might say, can we come back with our son or daughter? But I think a lot is about, I mean, you could make a child very unhappy by moving them away from their friends. Although you might know as a parent is the right thing to do, a 10-year-old might not see that. So it's a very big thing. But if they're starting to become unhappy and their confidence is rock bottom, you've got nothing to lose, so you might as well do it. Does that help? Sorry, I don't want to take...
Yeah, I completely agree. I think you also have to take on board the social, emotional, mental health side of things, as you say, the friendships, the relationships, the situation. But you also have to consider the strengths, not just the difficulties. What are the child's strengths? What do they want to do? What are their interests? So that you can then also work with the difficulties and try and get the most out of the education for the child and make the most of their time in education, that it's a happy and fulfilling one so they can fulfill their potential.
Yes, I would just add to that, actually, that confidence, you've heard about confidence here, and if you look at the statistics, the research, confidence plays a huge part in how well a child achieves. So start gauging their confidence rather than the marks they're coming across.
Thank you. I actually want to go back to the previous question. So it was a sort of follow-up to that question and your comments. I was sort of sitting there listening to some of the comments, kind of nodding away that has resonance with me and my son, talking about, you know, starting to become a school refuser, should you take him out of school? But then you said very much what you were talking about, your specialism was in dyslexia rather than autism. Can we still generalize from those comments to autistic children, or would you say it's very much specialist in dyslexia?
Probably a fairer comment to make is that I say it like this: if the child's main barrier to learning is autism, then Burlington is not the right school. That doesn't mean, like St. David's, we don't have children with, you know, a number of issues, and one might be autism. But if it's the autism that's stopping you from learning, we are saying in our group we have better schools for that. But we're not saying a plain no to autism. We're just saying that if that's what's making it hard in class for your child to focus, there are better settings.
It was also just partly the broader question of should you take your child out now and look for another school. So it doesn't have to be specifically to your schools.
No, so if a child is school refusing, the longer you let them school refuse, the harder it becomes to get them back into education. I mean, I've taken on children who've been out of school for 18 months, and it's very difficult because they relapse every holiday. When they come back, you revisit the same problem. I think schools like ours are smaller, have more staff, so we have more patience with these young people. But yeah, if a child's been refusing school for 3 months, it's easy to fix. If they've been refusing for 18 months, it's an awful lot harder.
Yes, I would add to that as well, that a school refuser in year 6 is a lot easier to deal with than a school refuser in year 10. And at the Good Schools Guide, we get a lot of requests from parents who've left it far too late. So their child is just about to start on the GCSE syllabus in year 10, and they're staying away from school, or they're having terrible struggles actually getting them through the door. So that connects with what Kun said earlier. Be alert to it early and move earlier. And look at the well-being of your child. Look how happy they are. And don't let it drag on to be too close to the public exams.
I was just curious to know the motivation you both had to lead a school that is special. Does it come from a heart of being dyslexic yourself? Like your journey, your own personal journey?
No. For me, it doesn't. I'm not dyslexic. Look, I've got an education to help young people. I love the idea that we can get up in the morning and educate the next generation who will look after this world. In SEN world, it's 10 times more important that we can help them. So the success stories are bigger, the impact we're having is bigger. It makes us get up in the morning much easier because you're making a real impact. And not only an impact on the child, but an impact on families at home. I mean, I get parents come to my door and they start crying and I think, what have I done? What has my staff done? But it's tears of joy because they are saying, everything at home has changed. Everything is better. Homework is no longer a struggle. They're coming home happy. They are engaged during the day. And they come and thank us. So it's that I find in SEN schools. It's the impact you have at the child's home life. And I can only imagine if they're in a boarding environment, it must be even more that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like when you asked earlier, tell us about your success stories. And people start saying, oh, well, I've got this famous alumni. I've got this famous person, that famous person, name drop. And actually, the stories that we remember, the success stories are, for example, we had one young man who was rejected from 13 schools before he came to us. He was told he wouldn't get any GCSEs, never mind anything after that. He got his GCSEs, he got his BTECs and his A-levels, and last year he graduated with a first in automotive design. They are the success stories. They are the ones that matter because you have given somebody a chance in life to live and to have some self-worth and some value. And those are the success stories that within the SEN schools get us out of bed in the morning. They're the things that we want to do. It's the caring for the individual. And that is very much in all of our schools what we are focusing on, getting the best for an individual child to succeed, whatever their potential.
And that I go around a lot of different schools. And Kuhn is quite right. When I come out of these specialist schools for specific learning difficulties that are so creative in the way they teach, they really have to find the whatever makes that child tick for each child, and it's going to be different. I come out of these schools and I think, why doesn't everybody want to go to one of them? They are absolutely fabulous. If you haven't been to a school, a specialist school like Burlington House, and you need to, go visit. They're great places to visit. So I think we've got time for one more question.
What I wanted to ask is, at the moment I'm being told for my son, he is 8, and I've been told that as long as his current school can provide him a basic education, I should be happy with that. And I've had him see a clinical psychologist, an educational psychologist, who have done tests and shown that he is meeting and sometimes exceeding, but in school he is working 2 years behind the expected level that he should be at. So in the annual review on Thursday, I said my simple question is, if at school you're telling me he's 2 years behind and he's having assessments and he's meeting or exceeding, and obviously in some aspects he's behind, should I still be fighting for him to have better? And the school said to me, as long as he's improving and we're closing the gap, that's all we need to work towards. And it didn't really sit right with me. And I don't know if I should continue the fight because I want him to be at his best, and if he's not getting that at school, then...
Yeah, you should absolutely continue that fight. Don't give up. I think it's really important. You know your child better than anyone. I think the phrase basic education, I would say, well, how are you quantifying that? You want your child to fulfill their potential. You want them to be... you want them to be capable of going out into the world and being the best version of themselves. And if they're not fulfilling their potential in the educational setting they're in at the moment, and they're not getting the support they need to allow them to do that, then yes, do continue fighting and get them into an environment where they will be able to flourish.
Super. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening. We have to finish it there. Great. Thanks a lot.
We hope you enjoyed that episode. Thanks for listening, and please head to schoolsshow.co.uk to check out our other recordings.